Hi, I'm Kate Snow, NBC News anchor and host of the NBC News podcast, The Drink. This month, I'm sitting down with the hilarious Leslie Jones. We chat about her remarkable journey from her childhood to family hardships to the unexpected, almost accidental road that led her to comedy. From her unforgettable years at Saturday Night Live to her new show, Roast My Rental, about vacation rentals gone terribly wrong. It is a funny, candid conversation, and I hope you'll give it a listen. Join us for The Drink, listen, and follow now wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Trial, a special series from Dateline True Crime Weekly, bringing you daily coverage from the Sean Combs racketeering trial. He has pleaded not guilty to all the charges against him. I'm Andrea Canning, and it's Wednesday, May 28th. Just a heads up, in this episode, we're going to be talking about some graphic details and harrowing subject matter. The witnesses testifying today at the federal courthouse ranged from LAPD officers, one in the Hollywood division, to a fashion stylist. Much of what they told the jury touches on accusations we've heard before, crimes the prosecution argues Sean Combs committed during his relationship with Cassie Ventura, arson, violence, trespassing. But he's not on trial for any of that. So how much of the testimony we've heard so far adds up to the prosecution's argument that Combs was using his businesses to carry out illegal activity? We'll be talking to NBC News legal analyst Danny Sabalos about the racketeering conspiracy charge in a little bit. First, let's find out more about that celebrity stylist, a close friend of Cassie, who said he saw Combs beating her again and again and saw Combs using his security team to control her. NBC News correspondent Chloe Malas is joining me from outside the courthouse to tell us what she has learned from today's court proceedings. Hey, Chloe.
Hey, Andrea.
Today, the stylist we mentioned, Chloe, Deontay Nash is his name. He took the stand. He said he got close to Cassie. He worked for both Sean Combs and Cassie, but he got close to her and testified about how he says Combs treated her.
He testified about alleged emotional and also physical violence that he witnessed between Cassie and Diddy. He said that Diddy called Cassie all sorts of terrible names, called her a slut, called her a bitch, called her a hoe, that he threatened to beat her up, that he told her that he was going to release explicit sex videos from freak-offs, not only to the public, but also to her parents' jobs to try to get them fired. And it just was incredibly heart-wrenching to listen to his testimony because it was clear he really cares about Cassie and that they're still friends and that he witnessed a lot of abuse.
This stylist is saying that Sean Combs would threaten Cassie and say, then your music won't come out. You know, he's really threatening her career as well, which to me is a form of control.
Absolutely. I mean, we've heard about Cassie being signed to Bad Boy early on in her career to this 10-album deal, but she never put out any albums. And it's been this big question. And during Cassie's testimony, we heard her talk about how Combs would control her by saying, I'm not going to release your music unless you do X, Y, and Z. And today, listening to Deontay talk about the fact that he would actually hear Combs on speakerphone say things like, I'm not going to put out your little mixtape, or, you know, I'm not going to put out your music unless you do this, really goes to illustrate this control.
Yeah, and Chloe, it even extends, according to Deontay, it extends into Sean Combs telling Cassie how to wear her hair. For example,
he talked about an incident that took place at a Vanity Fair Oscars party and that Cassie looked so beautiful and they had styled her hair down. And he actually said she looked bomb to one point where everybody kind of laughed.
Well, she's beautiful.
She is beautiful. And it was this kind of light moment as he was talking about very sobering things during his testimony. But he said that when they showed up, that Diddy came over and said, I told you I wanted her hair up. And he actually grabbed Deontay by his jacket and lifted him up in the air. And then Deontay said he went and grabbed his bobby pins and they ran to the bathroom and they started to pin her hair up. And then Diddy came over and he was like, oh, you were right. Her hair looks better down.
Deontay also talked about Combs's security team. And, you know, he's mentioning names.
Yeah, we're hearing some of the same names over and over, one of which is D-Rock. Deontay talked about a time in which he witnessed Diddy kick and hit Cassie. And this is the incident that we heard Cassie testify about, where he allegedly threw her into the side of a bed frame. And she got this terrible gash, almost like a hole on the side of her forehead. I mean, the pictures are just gruesome.
I remember seeing the photos.
And instead of taking her to the hospital, he just said his head of security, D-Rock, would take her to a plastic surgeon.
This is coming from Deontay, the stylist, but we should remind everyone that Sean Combs has denied these allegations. Chloe, the LAPD officer who took the stand tied things back to Kid Cudi's testimony from last week. And if you'll recall, that testimony was about Combs allegedly trespassing in his house.
Officer Ignacio with the LAPD, he testified that early one morning in December 2011, he got a call from dispatch to go to this home in the Hollywood Hills, and that there was an active break-in. And then when he pulled up in his cop car to this house, not realizing it belonged to musician Kid Cudi, he saw a black Escalade start pulling away. And he testified that he actually memorized the license plate number, Andrea, because he thought to himself, that car might have something to do with why we were just called to this house.
Oh, interesting. And so he runs the plate?
He does. And when he runs the plate, he sees that it's registered to Bad Boy Productions.
The defense cross-examined this officer. How did they pick apart his story?
When Combs' defense attorney got up there to cross-examine him, they said, okay, so you guys pull up to the house, you go inside, and how did you get inside? The officer testified, well, we opened the front door. He's like, okay, so when you got inside, you saw no signs of forced entry. Did you see the house torn apart? The officer says no. He's like, did you see, you know, anything that would make you think that somebody broke in? No, I didn't really see anything. You didn't see anybody there with a gun? No. You weren't called to the home because there was a kidnapping? No. Basically, they're poking holes in this idea from Combs' personal assistant that testified yesterday, Capricorn, that she was kidnapped, forced to the home of Kid Cudi to break in, that Diddy had a gun. And they're saying, look, you're a police officer. You went to go investigate this. And you basically found a house with the door unlocked and maybe some Christmas presents unwrapped. But that's all you saw. That's right. Not kidnapping. There's no forced entry.
It's just placing a vehicle registered to Bad Boy at the scene. But nothing else that the officers saw. Interesting. Prosecutors then, Chloe, they called an arson investigator. And this is important because this also comes back around to Combs and Kid Cudi again, right?
Right. So about 2 weeks after this alleged trespassing, Kid Cudi's Porsche is parked in his driveway, and there's an explosion inside the car. Someone cut the roof of his convertible and drops something called a Molotov cocktail inside, which we've talked about before. So the reason today we heard from someone from the Los Angeles Fire Department is this person investigates fires, and he found the Molotov cocktail, and he sent that off to be tested for DNA and fingerprints.
After the break-in, fingerprints were taken by LAPD. They were sealed and put into evidence.
Yes, Andrea, you're right. There were these fingerprints that were taken at Kid Cudi's home in December. This firefighter, who's also an arson expert, he wanted to look at those fingerprints, but those fingerprints that were sealed into evidence, they were gone.
According to this investigator, they were destroyed.
And so the prosecutors start asking him, did you order the destruction of that evidence? He said no. Mm. And then they said, well, have you ever in your long career had someone destroy evidence that wasn't at your directive? And he said, absolutely not. And that's where Combs' team swooped in. Objection.
And this is huge because the defense moved for a mistrial.
This was such an explosive moment. My head was like a ping pong ball watching Diddy's legal team get into this massive argument with New York prosecutors. They sent the jury out of the room.
Oh, wow.
And Combs' team was like, we're moving for a mistrial. This is outrageous prejudice to the jury because you're insinuating that Diddy, because he's so powerful and he has connections to potentially the LAPD or the LAFD, that somebody at his directive went in there and destroyed it. And even if you strike this from the record, the jury still heard it and they can never unhear it. And it was this back and forth. Prosecutors said that they weren't doing anything improper with their line of questioning with the firefighter and arson expert, that they were actually just trying to get ahead of what they expected Diddy's legal team's cross-examination of this guy to be, and assuming that they were going to be talking about the fact that these fingerprints were gone. But the judge, he was very calm, but he was stern, and he said, look, I'm denying the motion for a mistrial. Basically, there's no turning this massive 18-wheeler around here. But he did say, but I will tell the jurors when they come back in the room that they need to disregard this particular part of the testimony.
Oh, what a day. All right, Chloe, well, we're not done. When we come back, NBC News legal analyst and defense attorney Danny Savalos is back to help us understand why the prosecution is so focused on the Molotov cocktail that was dropped into Kid Cudi's Porsche.
Hey guys, Willie Geist here, reminding you to check out the Sunday Sit Down podcast. On this week's episode, I get together with the hilarious Ken Jeong to talk through a career of unforgettable roles, from the Hangover movies to the cult favorite show Community, and his latest in the Netflix cultural sensation, K-pop Demon Hunters. You can find our conversation for free wherever you download your podcasts.
Welcome back, everybody. Danny Savalos is here as promised.
Hey!
Danny, can you just one more time, we know you've done this for us before, but if you could give us another simple definition for racketeering conspiracy.
Racketeering is having an enterprise with multiple people and conducting unlawful affairs through that enterprise. Combs is charged with racketeering conspiracy. And this is a really, in my opinion, very easy crime to prove. All you need to prove is that the defendant agreed to participate in this enterprise, with the addition of two crimes that are enumerated in the racketeering statute: kidnapping, arson, violence, drug trafficking. You don't have to prove that he actually participated in them. You don't even have to prove that he was physically present when these crimes were committed. The mere agreement is enough for a conviction on racketeering conspiracy charges.
So let's talk about why the prosecution is so focused on this firebombing of Kid Cudi's Porsche. Their allegation is that Combs ordered, that Molotov cocktail, someone working for him, they believe, carried out this act.
Right. All of this testimony about allegedly firebombing a car, or drug use during the freak-offs, or his former assistant claiming that she was kidnapped, those are critical to the elements of the case the prosecution must prove. But importantly, they don't need to show that Combs kidnapped anyone. They don't need to show that he threw the Molotov cocktail. They just need to show that he agreed to participate in some criminal enterprise and that these crimes were committed in furtherance of that enterprise.
Let's talk about the sex trafficking charge. Today, the prosecution asked Cassie's stylist, Deontay, to testify to her frame of mind that she didn't want to have these freak-offs, but felt like she had to. Does that fit the legal definition of coercion?
Coercion is commonly understood under the statute to mean the threat of physical harm, not merely haranguing, harassing, bothering, or even threatening with loss of job or any kind of social pressure. That wouldn't be enough, but it certainly is helpful to the government to show this overall atmosphere of sort of threatening, harassive, hostile environment where these witnesses saw not only Combs be nasty to people, but physically violent as well. It's all part of the big picture, and it helps the government.
The defense, Danny, has asked for a mistrial a couple of times now. We talked about those fingerprints. Do you see anything happening that could make a guilty verdict reversible on appeal or something the defense can use down the road?
Yeah, the mistrial request today, they preserved it for the record, but if Combs is convicted, I don't see this being a particularly appetizing appellate issue. It seemed to me that the prosecution was basically trying to ask questions to confirm that that witness didn't lose the fingerprint cards. I understand the defense's argument, and they have to make that argument. And in fact, I don't think even the defense expected that their mistrial motion would be granted. Virtually none of these motions are granted. But they got this benefit of having some of the testimony stricken. So it's the old theory of if you ask high, you might get what you want, even if that ends up being somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. Okay, Danny, thank you for breaking this all down for us. For those of us who are not lawyers, it can get complicated, so we very much appreciate your insight.
Thank you.
And Chloe, you are back with some big news on Cassie Ventura.
That's right. So she has given birth to her third child, a baby boy, in New York yesterday. We don't know the name or any other details, but it sounds like mom and baby are healthy and all is okay.
Wonderful news. Thank you, Chloe. And thank you again, Danny. And we will be back tomorrow with a new episode. If you want to read the latest developments and analysis from inside the courtroom, check out the NBC newsletter, Diddy on Trial. Go to nbcnews.com/Diddy to find that. On Trial is produced by Franny Kelly with help from the Dateline True Crime Weekly team. Our senior producers are Allison Orr and Liz Brown-Kurloff. Original music by Jesse McGinty. Paul Ryan is executive producer and Liz Cole is senior executive producer of Dateline.
I'm Craig Melvin.
Cheers.
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 I've always been a glass half full kind of guy. And now I'm talking to some people who look at the world that way too. Some really fascinating folks who share their defining moments, their triumphs, their challenges. Their stories are funny and quite candid. So I hope you'll join me each week. And who knows, you might just come away with your own glass half full.
Search Glass Half Full with Craig Melvin from today on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts.